Welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson, dipping into our bag of lost old-time radio shows performed by ART. Here's a lost show from the series Retribution. It's performed by ART's chapter in Lexington, Kentucky. It's called Sweetwater.
American Radio Theater brings you another thrilling tale of those who tempt the fates.
Retribution.
Retribution. Unavoidable. Inevitable. Yet there are always some who invite its tragic call. Do you? Tonight we bring you the tale of still another mortal who thought that he could cheat the fates and avoid just payment for his crime, but who inevitably made his acquaintance with retribution. It's a story of greed, which we call Sweetwater. The greed that burns in the hearts of men will fester in their minds until achieved, and then they wake to find the goal they sought heaped high with the ashes of ruin. To those whose only purpose is greed, there must await destruction. Man cannot reach his destiny over the broken hearts and lives of other men. But this obvious truth escaped the scheming, greedy mind of Martin Wilkins. The goodwill any man bore him would be immediately translated into an effort to make capital of a friend's good intent. Jed Smith was several years older than Martin Wilkins. In fact, Jed and Martin's father had been partners once, partners tramping the desolate wastes of the southwestern desert in search of gold. They'd not found it before Martin's father died, but they'd accomplished enough of the prospecting so that when Jed did find it, he figured that a share of his good fortune should rightfully belong to his partner. The senior Wilkins being dead, Jed did the next best thing, paid a call on his dead partner's son.
Here you are, Millie. Have another little shot.
What are you trying to do? Get me loaded?
What's your guess?
I don't play guessing games.
Okay. Guess I'll kiss you then. There. Now you don't have to guess anymore.
You're a pretty sharp guy. What do you see in a jerkwater town like this?
Nothing especially.
Then why don't you get out of it?
Why don't you?
Maybe the dopes in this town are nearer my speed than the wise guys in the big spots.
Hey, you just said I was a wise guy. Ain't I your speed?
Maybe.
In that case... What? Who is it?
Jed Smith.
Huh? Excuse me, honey.
Hello, son.
Jed, why, you old son of a gun. What are you doing here?
I come down to see you. Want to have a little chat.
Well, I wasn't exactly expecting company, but come in. Come in, Jed.
Thanks. Oh, excuse me, I didn't know you had company. I'll come back later.
Nah, never mind. Millie's a friend of mine. Millie, this is Jed Smith. He's a really nice guy, behind the whiskers.
Just come out of the desert. It didn't exactly come on a social call. Might have spruced up a bit if I'd have known.
Hello, Mr. Smith.
Sort of come on business with Martin here.
Well, I'll just finish my drink and leave you two alone then.
Yeah, I'll see you later, Millie.
Here's health. Maybe I'll see you sometime, Mr. Smith.
Hope so, Miss...
Jones. Millie Jones. I'm usually around. Have a nice chat, Martin.
Sorry if I interrupted anything, Martin.
Forget it. Glad to see you, Jed. Still chasing that yellow stuff around the sand?
Nope. All done with chasing it.
I figured you'd give up someday.
I found it.
Too bad my old man didn't quit before it got... What did you say?
Said I found it. Looky here. What do you think of that, son?
Holy smoke! That quartz is loaded with gold.
6,000 to the ton. Hydrassade.
I've never seen richer ore any place.
I uncovered this vein. About 8 feet wide. And there must be a mile and a half of it.
A mile and a... Well, looks like you stuck it out until she paid off. You'll be a millionaire, Jed.
There's just one catch. Can't work it. Yet.
What do you mean?
No water. Not in 120 miles. Can't no human live in that desert without water.
Well, for that kind of gold, you can haul water.
Nope, nope. Too far. No roads. Couldn't haul enough water in there to last a week.
But for dough like that...
I got a better idea.
What?
There's a winter spring about half a mile from the vein. Dries up in the summer, but I figure we can sink a well.
We?
Look, son, your old man taught me all I know about gold. Him and me started tracing this vein together. It was him showed me where to look and what to do. He's just as responsible for me finding her now as if he was still alive.
So?
So I figured his share ought to rightfully go to you.
Well, that's a mighty good piece of news, Jed.
I figure it's rightly yours. After all, your pappy was awful good to me. You wasn't old enough to go prospecting when he teamed up with me.
I guess not.
I was just about your age then, 25. That was 15 years ago, but I ain't never forgot his kindness to me.
I guess you ain't, if you're willing to give me half of what you found.
Well, matter of fact, it ain't exactly given, son. You see, it's going to take a piece of cash to sink that well.
That ought to be easy to get from the bank with that ore to show.
Been my habit not to have much truck with banks. No, I feel it'll be best if you can raise the cash.
How much you figure it'll take?
Well, I have my regular outfit, tent and burrs, three of them. But it'll take some special equipment to sink that well. Reckon she'll cost around $800. Now, if you're willing to put up that much, half of the claim is yours.
$800? Martin didn't have $100. Never had had. He just lived from week to week, working as little as possible, gambling a little on a sure thing, and taking everybody he could. Ordinarily, a request for $800 cash made to Martin Wilkins would have fallen on deaf ears. Yet in this case...
You just made yourself a deal, Jed.
You'll put up the money?
Have it for you in a couple of days.
The sources of ready cash available to Martin Wilkins were extremely narrow. Certainly no acquaintance or bank would trust him with a loan, and he had no property of value. However, he did have an idea. Everyone in town knew about Old Man Davidson, knew he slept at the back of his secondhand store. Everyone knew, too, that he never had been known to enter a bank, and since he did quite a business, the natural assumption was that somewhere within the confines of the pile of rubble he called a store, he kept a large sum of money. No one could hope to find any given article in this mass of junk without instructions from the old man himself. And Martin intended on getting those instructions. The lock was old and weak, and easily forced by a man of determination. Quietly, cautiously, Martin let himself in. He'd only been in Old Man Davidson's store once before, and what with his face mask, he was certain the old man wouldn't recognize him. And now, with evil dictating his acts, he made his way quietly to the back of the store where the old man slept.
Hey, you, wake up!
Huh? Who? What?
Look, there's a .45 pointed right between your eyes. You make one peep and you get it.
What do you want?
Money.
I ain't got any money.
Never mind the stall. You got money hid somewhere and I want it.
No,
I ain't in the mood to fool around. Where is it?
Under the floor, by the bed. There's a loose board.
That's better.
Don't take it. Don't take my money, please. It's all I got.
Which board?
I saved it all my life. Please.
Which board, I said? Or do you want some more?
No, please. That one by your left foot.
A whole $10 full.
$2,300, my whole life.
$2,300. Well, to tell you the truth, I don't need quite that much. Here, you keep the $300.
All right, Martin. Hold up. I'm coming up too on this one. clear. Phew. Shows up with a lot of dirt today.
Yeah. Too bad you can't drive the Jeep. Then I could spell you.
Sure was good out of your head, buying this Jeep. Beats hauling out that dirt with them burrs.
How much more you figure we gotta dig?
Yeah, a couple more days. Getting mighty wet down there now. 15 more feet, we'll have a right nice well of sweet water. Then we can start mining the ore.
There are two kinds of yellow fever. One, the disease produced by the germ. The other, the disease produced by the dull glow of gold. Of the two, the latter is most fatal. When a man gets the lust for gold into his soul, all else goes wanting. He'll drive himself to the ends of the earth in pursuit of it. He'll cheat, steal, yes, even kill for it. Jed Smith had for so long been a companion of the tiny specks of yellow metal that he was immune. But Martin Wilkins proved to be quite susceptible to yellow fever. He worked like a madman, hacked away at the gold-bearing brittle white quartz in a frenzy. He never went to town. Even taught Jed to drive the Jeep so he could go to town whenever supplies were needed. He was a man possessed. Only one thing on his mind. Gold. Then came the evening when Jed returned from a trip into town with some startling news.
Martin! Oh, Martin!
Hello, Jed.
We got company, Martin.
Millie!
Hello, Marty.
Millie, what are you doing here?
I'm gonna live here.
We got married, Martin.
Married? You and Millie? That's a laugh.
What's funny about it?
Hope you don't mind, son. Fact is, I've been lonesome all my life. Never figured I had enough to offer a woman before, but now with this gold...
Jed tells me you've been digging quite a lot of gold, Marty.
I was telling Millie, must have close to 75,000 in ore out. All we gotta do is haul her into town this fall and have her smelted.
That's right. Only half of it's mine.
Oh, sure. Millie understands that.
Even so, considering your background, Millie... You've done pretty well for yourself at that.
Now, with Millie's arrival, a strange thing happened. In town, where there had been other girls, Millie had excited in Martin only a passing interest. But here at the mine, with 120 miles of sandy waste separating him from all the rest of humanity, Martin felt his pulse quicken at her presence. Martin held himself in check for nearly a week, avoiding Millie wherever possible, but always conscious of her presence. Then came a day when one of the burrows got loose and Jed had gone off into the hills hunting it. The knowledge that Millie was alone in the cabin was too much for Martin, and he came out of the mine early in mid-morning.
Marty, thought you was digging.
Yeah, I was.
What made you stop?
What do you think?
Jed ain't here right now.
Why'd you marry him, Millie?
Don't tell me that makes any difference to you.
Might?
You never asked me.
Maybe I hadn't gotten around to it.
And maybe you weren't intending to. Look, Marty, all my life I've been nothing. Just nothing. Everything I had came secondhand. Even guys. I got tired of all the lousy tramps I knew.
Jed know about them?
Yeah, I told him. He didn't care. He was ready and willing to take me out of that and give me a new chance. Well, I took it, and I'm glad I did. Got any objections?
Not if you ain't.
What do you mean? Why should I have any objections?
Maybe living with a guy you don't love won't turn out to be so hot either.
How do you know I don't love him?
I'll show you how I know. Come here.
Cut it out, Marty. You got no right to be kissing me.
Kissing ain't something you can do by yourself.
I wasn't kissing you.
Okay, I'll give you another chance. Maybe you could do better this time. Now, what do you think about being in love with Jed?
Okay, so I ain't in love with him. But he give me a chance to be something, and I'm gonna take it.
I ain't suggesting you pass it up.
No? What are you suggesting, then?
That you don't pass up anything else on account of it.
¶¶ So began Martin Wilkins' repayment to Jed Smith for the kindness and generosity the one had showed the other. Having been acquainted with her previously, Martin had no qualms about making love to Millie, even though now she was Jed's wife. But Martin's repayment of Jed's kindness wasn't to stop there, for Martin would soon have other plans. Plans which began to formulate later that day when Jed returned from his search for the burrow.
Hello, son.
Evening, Jed.
Phew. I'm all tuckered. Must have hiked 15 miles.
Find the burrow?
Yeah. I found him. Dead.
Dead?
Yep. Must have gotten to a patch of palaberries.
Palaberries?
Yeah. You've seen them. Them little dark purple berries? Grows on them scraggly bushes.
Oh, yeah.
Poisonous strychnine they are. That juice is about the most potent poison I ever seen. Palaberries seem to be kind of native to this desert.
Poison, huh? Well, sorry about the burrow, Jed.
Yeah, too bad. But we still got the other two left. Besides, we ain't had much use for burros since you bought that jeep.
You'd think even a dumb animal would learn better than to eat stuff that would kill him.
Ain't got no chance to learn. Them berries is deadly. The first time they eat 'em's the last time.
Morning, Marty.
Millie. Hello.
How are you?
Fine. Thought you was going to town with Jed.
So did Jed. But I had a terrible headache this morning. Funny, I got over it just as soon as Jed left.
I see. Well, all things considered, this ought to be a mighty pleasant day.
It's nice sitting here in the evening with you, Marty.
Yeah.
Without Jed around.
You finding out being married to Jed is a pretty high price to pay for all the things you wanted?
Yeah.
You know, I've been thinking. You might be able to have them same things without paying that price.
What are you talking about?
Half that mine belongs to me. In other words, I can give you just as much money as Jed can, and a whole lot of other things besides.
I'm Jed's wife, and you're his partner. Crazy enough to think we could double-cross him?
It's simple, Millie. All we gotta do is leave. I can sell my half of the mine for plenty with them samples to show. We can get out of this oven. You can divorce Jed, and we can get married.
Seems like it's being awful mean to Jed after what he's done for both of us.
Look, Millie, you don't get what you want in this world by worrying about the other guy. Do you want the kind of life all this money will buy, and me too? Or do you want to go on tied to Jed?
You know what I want, Marty.
Okay, then there ain't no more questions about it. Only we gotta be careful. Jed's gonna be plenty sore, and Jed ain't the kind of guy I want to be around when he's sore at me.
We could leave right now, before he gets back. We could use the burros.
No good. With the jeep, he'd get back to town before we did. It'll take us a couple of days to sell the mine. That means we gotta see to it that Jed's stuck here for a while.
But how can we do that?
I've got some ideas along that line, Millie, but I gotta think 'em out.
One thing's sure, we gotta leave without Jed knowing it.
Tomorrow night ought to be a good time. He'll be wore out after his trip. That's when we'll do it. Just how we do it, I'll have to figure out.
The next day was hot. The dry, scorching heat that is known only to those who've been in the desert during a cloudless summer. The heat itself wouldn't have kept Martin from working the mine, but the anticipation of Jed's return and his escape with Millie did. Martin was a crafty man. He laid his plans carefully. He was inherently a coward, and he wished to be sure his acts would produce no repercussions in the form of a later meeting with Jed. His plan was well shaped in his mind late that afternoon when Jed returned.
Hello.
Hi, Jed. You made good time.
Didn't want to leave you too long, knowing you were sick. How you feel?
Better.
Oh, Martin, you ain't working?
I asked Martin to stay at the cabin today, the way I felt.
I see.
Figured you'd be more interested in me taking care of your wife than mining for one day.
Uh-huh.
I bet you're tuckered out, Jed.
Plum, I'm going to hit the hay right now. You unload the supplies, Martin?
Sure, Jed.
Feel like I could sleep right through to daylight tomorrow.
Millie. Millie. You outside?
I've been waiting for you, Martin.
Well, I'm here now. Give us a kiss. He asleep?
Dead to the world. He won't wake up.
Bring me the water bucket. While I'm down at the well, get out them two canteens.
One bucket wasn't enough. The second canteen isn't full.
It's full enough. With the other one, we'll have plenty of water to last us.
You gonna fill the bucket again for Jed?
Nah, we got a lot of things to do.
Want me to put the things in the Jeep?
We ain't going in the Jeep.
What?
We're taking the burros. I got them already down in the pen.
Why don't we take the Jeep?
Because we can't disable the burros without killing them. And we don't want to leave Jed any way to follow us.
But he'll use the Jeep.
No, he won't. Come with me. I got that figured out.
I don't see why we have to go on them burros.
I told you we have to be careful, Millie. I got this all figured out, and this is the way it's got to be. Understand? Here we are.
What are you going to do?
Drain the gas out of the tank. Then when Jed finds we're gone, he can't follow us. Give us plenty of time in town.
But what about the drum of gas?
We'll drain that, too. There. Now the spigot on the drum. There. That takes care of everything.
We ready to start, then?
Not yet. The moon will be up in half an hour. Might as well wait for that. Be easier to see.
I'm nervous.
Nothing to be nervous about. Here, have a seat. We got a half hour yet to kill. Go easy, Millie. We don't want to excite them burros. One of them brazen, we're through. Hold it. I'll open the gate. Millie!
Shut up, you fool! You want to wake Jed up?
The burros! They're gone!
You'll wake up Jed.
I got a hunch Jed is already awake. Come on! He's gone! He's taken everything!
Wait, here's a note.
A note? What's it say?
My dearest Millie.
Have known for a long spell about you and Martin. Watched you two tonight. So's not to cause any trouble, I'll pull out. I'll be selling my share of the mine, taking my burros and leaving the Jeep for you.
He was on to us.
Millie, them canteens, where'd you leave them?
Right outside there where we filled them.
They're gone. He took them, Millie. They're gone.
What's wrong with you? You act crazy. We've got a whole well full of water.
Something you don't know. I figured to fix it so Jed could never follow us. You see, after I drew the last bucket of water, I poisoned the well with pala berries.
Such is the manner in which retribution paid its call into the lives of Martin Wilkins and Millie Jones. Martin made certain he'd closed the last avenue of escape to Jed, and then found himself and Millie left in the very spot they'd planned for Jed, sitting in the middle of the desert with a well full of poisoned water, poisoned by Martin's own hand. And so they died, the excruciatingly painful death known only to those who battled an unbeatable adversary, the desert. Strange are the forces of fate, certain the justice of destiny. All who yield to the voice of evil find waiting in the end retribution.
You've been listening to Sweetwater, written by Dwight Houser for the ABC radio series Retribution, and originally broadcast on September 25th, 1947. This American Radio Theater production starred Aaron Hiles as Martin, Pam Hungate as Millie, and David Maddox as Jed, with Stuart Talbert as the storekeeper. J. John Greenway was the voice of Retribution. Original music written and performed by Chad Rennie. The production was directed by Mike Wheeler. I'm your announcer, Tom Fitzpatrick, thanking you for listening and inviting you to join us again next time. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Let's listen to some music from the Dinah Shore Show from 1941.
You're sitting in a diner on a cross-country train going through one little town after another, and you press your nose up against the glass and look at America roll by. And the miles of scenery become one city block in most any town, and nearly every window has a little white flag with a blue star, maybe two or three. Most of us these days are getting mail from the men those little stars symbolize, and it's cute the things they talk about. An old collie dog, or the high school football team, the smell of green corn packed away in the silo, and purple vineyards and white cotton fields and real lemon pie. And they talk about music, too, because a fella can be away from home and hear a tune, and presto, he's home again. So I brought along a couple of songs this fella talks about. If that's the way you want it, baby, baby, that's the way it's gonna be. I'll wait for you forever, baby. I'll wait because I'm sure you're waiting for me. The day will come, I don't mean maybe, when you'll be mine, but definitely. If that's the way you want it, baby, baby, that's the way it's gonna be. When this song comes out of a radio set up there on the rim of the Arctic Circle, or down there on a South Pacific isle, some fellow who once taught school in Portland or made furniture in Grand Rapids imagines a certain girl is beside him again, and the Arctic snow becomes moonlight on an Oregon highway, and the tropic heat a cool breeze across a Michigan lake. So let's sing it for him. How much do I love you? I'll tell you no lie. How deep is the ocean? How high the sky? How many times a day do I think of you? How many roses are covered with dew? Would I travel to be where you are? How far is the journey from here to a star? And if I ever lost you, how much would I cry? Struggles with traffic, the problems of business and taxes, and getting a square meal. But each day is made worthwhile by his return to a little island set apart from the cruel world, an oasis called home, where comfort and quiet appear through the magic touch of his little wife. I know this is so because I see it in the insurance advertisements. On the other hand, there's the home of William and Mary, where we go each Thursday night. Will is our stage and cinema friend, Roland Young. And Mary is Cornelia Otis Skinner, famous daughter of one of America's first families of the theater. Writer, monologist, and student of ways to make it too confusing for Will. Another chapter in the life of William and Mary with Roland Young and Cornelia Otis Skinner.
What, Mary, what? What did you say?
I didn't say anything.
I thought you said something.
Oh, no, Will. I was asleep.
And so was I.
Well, then why did you...
Why did I what?
Nothing.
What did you say?
I said nothing.
You didn't say nothing at all.
Oh, go back to sleep.
I can't now. You've got me wide awake.
I have.
You don't think some stranger has?
But you were the one who...
We'll go to sleep.
You wake me completely up and then accuse me of...
Go to sleep.
I suppose that's a lullaby.
Of course, if you're going to pick a quarrel in the middle of the night...
I'm not.
Then don't.
I'm not, I tell you.
Shh. Don't tell me.
Will. Will.
Mm-hmm.
Will.
What?
Never mind.
Oh, good Lord, Mary, can't you keep quiet?
I said never mind.
But I have minded. What was it?
I just wondered if I'd locked the front door.
You want me to go see?
Oh, goodness, no, only...
I suppose I'll have to.
Oh, no, please don't get up, Will. I'm sure I locked it. I never don't. I know I locked it. At least I think I did.
Well, did you or didn't you?
I must have. Lie down.
Monday night with a tough week ahead of you, and will they let you sleep?
I was only wondering about the door.
Waking a tired man up to wonder about a door.
Well, you were the one who woke me up. I was sound asleep when you woke me up saying what?
Saying what?
What?
Well, what did I say?
That's precisely what you said.
Well, Mary, the middle of Monday night is no time for playing games. I'm asking you what I said.
And I'm telling you what you said. You said what? W-H-U-T, A-T.
Seems a comparatively harmless thing to say.
Well, it woke me up. Go to sleep.
If you keep quiet, I might. Good night.
Good night. Did you know the Perkins house was broken into the other night?
It's a nice bedtime story. Good night.
Good night.
Who broke into the Perkins house?
They don't know. Good night.
Good night. Did they get anything?
Only the silver. Good night.
That's good. Good night.
Good night. It seems someone had left the front door unlocked.
Oh, Lord, Mary, all right, I'll go.
Now, Will, don't be ridiculous. If anyone goes, I'm going. But nobody needs to go because I'm sure I locked it. Anyway, it's cold.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Good night.
Good night. What's the matter?
Nothing.
You crying?
No.
What are you sniffing for?
I was just seeing if I smelled something.
You can't see if you smell something. What did you think you saw you smelled?
Smoke.
Smoke. Now, Mary.
No. I guess it's nothing out of the ordinary. Good night.
Good night.
Will.
Huh?
Are you awake?
No, I tell you.
Will.
What is it?
Shh. Why don't you answer?
You tell me to shh.
Listen.
What to?
Well, that's just what I don't know.
Well, how will I know when I hear it?
Shh. Hear that?
Hear what?
That noise.
What kind of a noise is it?
Well, I don't quite know. It was funny.
Funny?
Uh-huh.
What did it sound like?
Sort of thump.
A human thump or a plumbing thump? Or maybe it was a dog thump.
No. It was more...
Where'd it come from?
It was either in the house or outside.
That simplifies things.
I tell you what it was like. You know, when you think you're going to sneeze and you don't quite... You sort of choke up and make a queer noise in your throat.
Yeah?
Well, it wasn't like that.
Oh, my Lord, Mary.
Of course, you don't care whether or not the house is robbed.
Did it sound like a house being robbed?
How should I know what a house sounds like being robbed?
All right. Light the light.
No. Don't do that.
Why not?
They'll know we're awake.
Well, who'll know we're awake? The thumpers?
Oh, William, don't joke. What if it is someone?
Well, the light isn't going to attract them up here. Unless there's some species of thumping moth. Do you want me to go downstairs?
What good will that do?
you hear a shot, you can always phone the police.
Now, William, you're impossible. It's your fault, anyway.
It's my fault. It is my fault that you have hallucinations of thumping. You know, I have to try to have one good night's sleep and you keep me awake.
I keep you awake. You were the one who woke me up in the first place and got me all worked up. I was sleeping perfectly beautifully.
So was I. Darling, if I was as beautiful as you, darling. But I was... I, too, was sleeping beautifully.
There you go.
Holy heaven. Will a woman ever try to understand that when a man's tired, he wants some sleep?
A woman has to have sleep, too.
The woman thinks all a man has to do is to go to the office day after day and then night after night sit up listening to thumping noises. Just what do you want me to do about the noise?
Nothing.
Shall I go look for it?
No.
Would you like me to patrol the first floor?
No.
I could take along my revolver. I have no idea how to use it, but it might look smart.
No. Go to sleep.
It's like something asking someone to go to sleep at a mystery thriller.
I suppose you think a woman has nothing to do either.
Either.
Either. I suppose you think I'm doing nothing but sitting on my hands.
I never imagined you in that particular position, my dear.
I've had some perfectly awful times lately. Emmy's had extra homework, the maid's been sick, the laundry sends all your shirts back with no buttons on them. I've overrun this week's budget and I haven't even time for a permanent wave. No.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, too.
Now, what do you want me to do about the noise?
There's nothing to do, because I don't really know what the noise was.
Then should we turn out the light and try to get some sleep?
Yes, dear.
Good night, darling.
Good night, sweet.
Everything all right?
Everything's all right.
Night.
Night. William, do you suppose I really did lock that door?
No.
Back in 1847, a young boy was keeping books for a steamboat firm on the Mississippi River. But debits and credits were not for him. Folks said he was a dreamer who wasted his time writing music. But to his credit are some 150 folk songs that breathe America in every note. One song especially was an 1847 hit, and has stayed up there on the hit parade in our hearts ever since. The boy was Stephen Foster. And along with the Joseph Lilly Singers, here's that famous song of his. I come from Alabama with my banjo on my knee. I'm a gwine to Louisiana, my true love for to see. Well, it rained all day the night I left. The weather, it was dry. The sun so hot I froze to death. Susanna, don't you cry. Oh, Susanna, don't you cry for me. 'Cause I come from Alabama with my banjo on my knee. Well, I had a dream the other night when everything was still. Thought I saw Susanna come running down the hill. The buckwheat cake was in her mouth, the tear was in her eye. Says I, I'm coming from the south, Miss Susan, don't you cry. Oh, Susanna, don't you cry for me. 'Cause I come from Alabama with my banjo on my knee.
Oh, Susanna, don't you cry for me. I come from Alabama with my banjo on my knee. Oh, Susanna, don't you cry for me. I come from Alabama with my banjo on my knee. Yes, oh, Susanna, don't you cry for me.
Come from Alabama with my banjo on my knee.
With
This is Dinah putting down the transcontinental welcome mat and asking you all into the rumpus room for a little soiree. That means party, Harry. Mm-hmm. Hey, Harry, what are you beaming about?
Oh, Dinah, that was really swell.
Well, thank you, Harry. I'm glad you like it.
Well, I'm glad that you're glad.
I'm glad that you're glad that I'm glad.
Life can be beautiful.
Why, it's Phil Silver.
Glad to see you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. What a coincidence this is. Two Dinahs in front of one microphone.
Two Dinahs?
Yes. You're Dinah Shore, and I'm Dinah Take You Out. There, now I've said it.
Oh, never mind that, Phil. Have you met Harry Von Zell?
No, I don't think he's ever had the pleasure.
Harry, this is Phil Silvers.
How do you do?
How are you? You are the announcer on this program?
Yes, that's right. Then what do you do, Mr. Silvers?
Oh, same as every average American. I wait in dark alleys for butter. You see, Dinah, Harry, as long as you're on your feet, would you mind walking away? Thank you very much. That's a fine boy. After all, why should I dilly with a man when I can dally with a woman? And a beautiful woman at that, if I'm not being too overabundant.
Oh, Phil, it's really a pleasure having you here tonight.
No doubt it is. Because, Dinah, I'm going to do you a real big favor. I'm going to make you a great singer.
Well, thank you, but you mean you're not satisfied with the way I'm singing now?
Oh, no, girl. You've got a grand voice. Grand. But the songs... You're not singing the right kind of songs.
Oh, well, now, what's wrong with people will say we're in love?
It's too indefinite. Besides, it's got too much music in it, you know, especially for your voice. For your beautiful contralto, semi-quiver, resonant voice. You should sing a simple ditty like Hungarian Rhapsody No. 2.
Oh, Phil, that song is much too fast.
Why do you fight me like this? I mean... Do you want people to go around saying you only sing slow songs?
Well, no, but I...
Well, wait. I know what. If that song is too fast, how about singing a nice number like Flight of the Bumblebee?
Phil, that song has no words to it.
Well, buzz it. Buzz it. Hum it. Be different. You're such a silly, headstrong, impetuous girl.
Pardon me, Mr. Silvers. I don't like the way you're talking to Miss Shore.
If I could see him, I'd answer him. Dinah, who is this little man?
Phil, this is Robert Emmett Dolan, our orchestra leader. He may be short, but he's one of the finest musicians ever born.
Born? He looks more like he was put out by Reader's Digest.
Oh, yeah? Well, there's only one reason you're talking like this. You're bigger.
Oh, no. There's another reason.
Well, what is it?
You're smaller.
Oh, I...
Oh, God. Hit the road, you little conductor, you.
Boys, what are you arguing about?
Well, this guy here, who does he think he is trying to tell you what to sing? Next thing you know, you'll be trying to tell my orchestra how to play.
Well, that orchestra plays? Oh, man, I can get nicer music by walking on broken bottles.
I'm going now, but I'll be back when I grow up.
Now, just a minute, Phil. I like Bobby's orchestra. It has savoir-faire.
Well, maybe it has, but that brass section drowns it out. Get a load of that brass section.
What's wrong with it?
It needs a couple of fiddles.
Fiddles?
Yes, and the saxophone section and the rhythm section need more fiddles. Even the piano could use a couple of fiddles.
But Phil, who'd want to see an orchestra with 30 fiddles?
My brother, he owns a fiddle store around the corner. However, let's get back to your zinging, Dinah. I've written a wonderful song for you.
Oh, really? What's the name?
Phil Silvers. Glad to see you.
No, not your name. I mean the song. What's it called?
Oh, the song. I'm sorry, I lost my head for a minute. Well, frankly, it's been called a lot of things. But, Dinah, it's a great tune. A great tune.
Well, you seem to be very proud of it.
Well, why shouldn't I be, Dinah? This song is the most valuable thing in my possession.
Really?
Yes. I wrote it on the back of my ration book. Or is it ration book?
Oh, it's optional.
Oh. I wrote it on the back of my optional book.
Phil, you didn't really write a song. You're just kidding, aren't you?
Sure,
come
I'm
on.
Kidding. What do you mean, kidding? I did write one, and I want you to hear it. Look, why don't you come for a ride with me in my car? We'll park on a nice dark road.
And sing?
After a while, yes. Sing, too, yes.
Well, I'm sorry. I won't go with you on a dark road.
Superstitious, huh? Well, if you doubt my intentions, let's go to a place that's famous for singing. A place where people always sing.
Where's that?
The Hollywood Bowl.
The Hollywood Bowl? At this time of night, there won't be a soul there.
Great timing, isn't it?
Well, I still don't think you wrote a song.
Girl, don't say that. Everybody fights me. This tune is sensational. It tells a real story. Well, it's the story of a girl who loves a cowboy. That's it. The story of a girl who loves a cowboy. But the cowboy loves his horse. So the girl tries to win the boy away from his horse, and she bakes a big, luscious strawberry cake. Now, that's something the horse can't do. This makes the horse mad. So he goes out and eats a bale of hay. That's something the girl can't do. So here we have the cowboy with a girl and a cake on one hand and a horse full of hay on the other hand. He hasn't even got a hand free to call Mr. Anthony. Well, this leaves the cowboy befuddled, so he runs to the big city where he gets a job in a pepper factory.
A pepper factory?
Yes, a nice, easy job. He just goes around saying Gesundheit all day. Well, the girl leaves him flat. And...
Phil, yes? Come on, stop stalling.
Yeah, Phil, listen, let's hear that song you're bragging about.
I don't believe you. Come on.
Don't get your attitude.
Come on, Phil, sing it now.
Well, if I... Ah, pretty girl... It's like a melody.
Phil, hey,
please,
Phil.
I'm sending myself. See you little home.
Phil, that song was written by Irving Berlin.
How do you like that?
What's the matter?
They said the same thing when I wrote God Bless America. Who can you believe in? Everybody fights me. And they need it.
Hey, Phil. Wait just a minute. Don't feel too badly about it. Why, forget about music. After all, the only thing a musician does for a living is play around. Now, why not go into the grocery business with me?
Oh, Harry, the grocery business?
Yeah.
Well, ration points, OP... Or is it ration points?
It's immaterial.
Oh. Immaterial points, OPA, income taxes, empty shelves. Why, I need a grocery business like I need a hit in the head.
Uh-oh. Well, you're in it now. There goes the phone.
Okay, I'll take it. Silvers and Bonzel, groceries we wish we had to sell. What's that, lady? 2 pounds of bacon. Oh, kid, you're a dreamer.
Hey, Phil, do you know there's a customer in the store?
Shh, be quiet. Maybe she'll go away.
Well, one of you gentlemen wait on me, please. I don't want too many things, honest.
Watch it, Harry. If we sell anything, we're out of business.
I just want a package of Bird's Eye quick frozen vegetables.
Remember what I told you, Harry?
Okay. Look, lady, no, you wouldn't want any Bird's Eye quick frozen vegetables.
No, you wouldn't want any.
After all, Bird's Eye are only the finest of vegetables, grown under careful supervision on the best farmlands in the country. No, you wouldn't want any.
Oh, but if they're grown on the best farmlands...
Oh, lady, be democratic. Get the stuff that's grown anywhere.
Oh, but Bird's Eye quick frozen...
Quick frozen? Who wants quick frozen foods? Bird's Eye quick freezing only seals in all the vitamins and farm fresh flavor.
And who wants vitamins? Who wants to be healthy?
Now, look, it's been a long, hard day, and I'm tired. And I know that since Bird's Eye vegetables are all cleaned and prepared and ready to cook, they'll save me time and work. Why, all I have to do is pop them from the package into the boiling water. Now, come on, give me a package.
Oh, sure. Bird's Eye saves you up to 27 minutes preparation time, to be true. But you wouldn't want to miss those nice long hours in a hot kitchen cleaning and sorting vegetables, desanding spinach, depotting peas,
debrusseling sprouts.
Well, I certainly would. I'd take Bird's Eye vegetables at any price.
Price?
But Bird's Eye quick frozen vegetables save you money. These farm fresh foods usually cost you less per serving than market fresh foods, but... What's money?
Yes. What's money? If you stop thinking about it, it'll go away.
I still want them and make it Bird's Eye peas.
Oh, all right. But I'm warning you, you're only going to love them. Boy, see, that was close.
Yes. Think what would happen if we really tried to sell the stuff.
Yes.
Bedlam.
Have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree. Christmas. Christmas Eve will find me where the light gleams. I'll be home for Christmas if only in my dream. Christmas Eve will find me. La, da, da.
Thank you, everybody. This is Dinah, welcoming you to another Thursday evening program for Bird's Eye Frosted Foods. Hey, Harry.
Yes, Dinah.
Harry, while I go over and talk to Joe Lilly about that number we're going to do with the chorus, would you introduce our guest star for this evening, Mighty Woolley?
Oh, sure.
Thank you. I'll be right back.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time,
Harry.
Oh, hello, Bobby. What's on your mind?
Well, the producer of our program just got a telegram from Mighty Woolley.
Huh?
And it said that because of his studio schedule, he can't be here. So instead, he's sending over Phil Silvers.
Phil Silvers?
Yes.
That's bad. I can't tell Dinah this. Hey, Bobby, wait a minute. I got an idea.
What?
Listen, who knows what Monty Woolley looks like behind that beard? Nobody.
That's true.
Nobody. I bet even Woolley himself has forgotten what he looks like.
Well, what are you getting at?
Well, you just watch. Say, Dinah.
Yes, Harry.
I'm going to...
Why don't you introduce our guest star, G.
Well, I'm going to do that,
Okay.
But there's something that I wanted to tell you first.
What is it?
Monty Woolley has shaved off his beard.
His beard?
Yeah.
How could he do such a thing? How could he do it?
Well, he took a... Wait a minute, here he comes now. You just look for yourself.
Gee, you're right, Harry. He shaved off his beard. How could he do it?
Glad to see you. Glad to see you. Hello, Harry, you boy, you. Hello, Dinah, you girl, you.
How could you do it?
Oh, it was nothing. They told me you needed me, and here I am, raring to go. Just had a big, thick, juicy steak.
How could you do it?
Oh, I forced myself. And now for some laughs.
How could you do it?
Oh, it's nothing. I just put on my red nose and baggy pants, and away we go, laughing and screaming. I laugh. What are you staring at?
How could you do it? A man of your popularity. How could you do it?
How could you do it? How could you do it? What did you have for lunch? Parrot?
You know, all those people loved you just the way you were. How could you do such a thing?
Dinah, what did I do?
With a face like that, how could you shave off your beard?
My beard?
Yes, your beard.
What beard? Will you tell me what this is all about?
Oh, that beautiful beard. That wonderful beard. That gorgeous beard.
Beard, beard, beard. Dinah, will you stop beating around the bush? Oh, that's clever. Why do I say what they write? Fool.
Pardon me, just a moment. I think maybe I better explain this whole thing after all. Dinah, this is not Monty Beard. Monty Woolley. No, this is Phil Silvers.
This isn't Monty Woolley?
No.
Oh, I feel terrible about this.
Well, I feel awful about it, too.
You want to know something? I'm beginning to feel a little disappointed myself.
Oh, now, listen, don't you feel too badly about this, Phil. Honestly, we're really glad to have you here.
Yeah, but Monty,
Well, I know. You can understand how I feel. I'm just a little disappointed because Monty Woolley promised to take me over to 20th Century Fox and show me through the studios.
Yeah, and of course, we knew that only a big star could do that.
Foolish boy. Just happens that I'm a star at that very same studio. I only, the other day, I started making a swell picture there called Four Jills in a Jeep.
Four Jills in a Jeep?
Yes, Dinah, that's the story about those four wonderful girls who went overseas to entertain our boys.
Oh. Yeah, well, what part do you play in
the... Oh, you see, I play the part of a sergeant who drives the girls around in the Jeep.
Oh.
You know what a sergeant is? That's the G.I. version of a mother-in-law or everybody. Well, here I am making you hysterical with laughter when you really want to go to the studio. So just come along with me. I can fix everything.
Phil, I'm really excited about watching him make movies at a studio.
Oh, I'm glad you're happy. Oh, Dinah, there's the studio building right over there.
Oh, Harry. Look at all the stars' names up in lights.
Yeah, look at them. Tyrone Power, George Montgomery, Henry Fonda, Gene Tierney, Geraldine Noonan, B.S. Pulley, Sid Breckner, Malachi Kelp, Rufus. See, Phil, where is your name on the thing there?
Keep reading, keep reading.
Oh, I see Phil's name up there in lights. Harry, there it is.
Oh, that's right. Hey, what's that?
Oh, look, Phil, your name just went out.
How do you like that? Every time they put my name between Betty Grable's and Alice Faye's, it blows a fuse. Well, never mind, kids. Come on, Ron, and I'll take you into the studio. Just follow me. Careful now.
Gee, it's cold and damp down here.
You know something? This is like the Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, if we keep on, we might run into Nelson Eddy. And Harry's little baby likes shuffling and shuffling
around his
little
baby. Phil.
Phil.
Lost my head for a minute. Watch yourself now. Well, here we are in the studio.
I can see that, Phil, but there's one thing I don't understand. Why did we have to come in through that manhole?
Oh, you poor girl. I forgot you have open-toed shoes on, huh?
Phil, after all, you a star coming in through the manhole? Why, I can hardly believe it.
Harry, I can hardly believe it, too. But there it was in my contract. I'm in through the manhole, it says.
Come on, Phil, I'm anxious to meet some of those stars.
Yeah, how about those stars?
Okay. Oh, kids, you're really in luck. There's Betty Grable standing right over there behind that screen.
Werp.
Which... Wait a minute. How can you tell who's behind the screen? All you can see underneath is a pair of legs.
What else do you need with Betty Grable? Her driver's license? Where have you been, boy?
Look, Phil, two men are walking over toward your dressing room.
Oh, yes, that's Daryl Zanuck and my producer. They probably want to congratulate me on my last picture.
Yeah, well, they've got a funny way of doing it. They're picking up your dressing room. Look, Phil, they're carrying it over to the edge of the cliff. Hey! They run it over.
That's a strange way to act, throwing my dressing room over the cliff. Well, they'll have to give me a very good reason for doing a thing like that. Excuse me, I'll be back in a minute.
Okay.
Well, be careful.
Boy, he's mad. Gee.
Oh, is he ever telling them off, Dinah?
Well, here he comes back.
Yeah,
well,
here he comes.
Say, Bill, why did they throw your dressing room over the cliff?
Oh, everything's okay. They gave me a good reason.
Oh, really? What was the reason?
They thought I was in it.
That's all the time I've got for today. Please check out our website, AmericanRadioTheater.org, for more of our podcasts. And remember about our old-time radio marathon. That's on Saturday, April 30, from 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, to 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. RadioOutOfThePast.org in the Fred Bertelson Room. See you then!